Hello, this is Kevin Annett, Eagle Strong Voice. It's Saturday, November 6th. I'm bringing you a breaking news development in the campaign to issue an arrest warrant and to bring into trial for crimes against humanity Pope Francis Jorge Bergoglio. I'm speaking to you in my capacity as the Canadian Field Secretary for the Prosecuting Court, the International Common Law Court of Justice. The important news is that 10 Indigenous nations and their elders in Canada have allied with the court and have pledged themselves to aiding the arrest and prosecution of Jorge Bergoglio. And here are the details. Indigenous nations in Canada will aid in the arrest of Pope Francis. Coalition of Traditional Elders issues order barring Pope from entering their territories. Elders of 10 Indigenous nations have endorsed an international court's arrest order against Pope Francis and have declared they are barring him from their territories, which span all of Canada. The elders have also pledged to aid in the arrest of Pope Francis because of, quote, his unpunished massacre of our people and our land and his personal guilt in the ongoing torture, trafficking, and death of our children. Now, their order was issued today as part of an agreement with the International Common Law Court of Justice and myself, Kevin Annett. The elders represent the following sovereign nations in Canada: the Squamish, the Gitxsan, the Nutchalnuth, the Interior Salish, the Chilcotin, Métis, Cree, Anishinaabek Ojibwe, Mohawk, and Mi'kmaq people. The order says, quote, if Jorge Bergoglio trespasses on our territories, he will be arrested by the peacekeepers of our warrior societies and surrendered to the International Common Law Court of Justice in accordance with our arrest order of November 1st. We endorse and ally ourselves with the court and with our brother Kevin Annett Eagle Strong Voice, who has for years spearheaded the fight to bring Bergoglio and his genocidal church to justice. Now, a copy of this order can be found at murderbydecree.com under ITCCS updates, the posting for November 6th. That will be up very soon at that website. You can see more of it. Now, it's important to remember this development is happening right when the Vatican has invited various Aboriginal puppet leaders to Rome on December 17th for a two-day consultation. Now, of course, when I say puppet leaders, I don't mean the traditional leaders of the Indigenous nations in Canada, but the appointed government-funded chiefs who do not represent their people and have been working actively to suppress the evidence of genocide in Canada, including the mass graves of children. So that's one of the reasons that prompted the 10 Indigenous nations and their traditional leaders to come forward and say, no, these people do not represent us. We do not want this Pope on our territory. As a matter of fact, to quote from their statement, we, the traditional Siam, Sachem, and elders of our nations, hereby invoke the Great Spirit and the land law of our respective people and forever ban Jorge Bergoglio, Pope Francis, and his agents from our territories. We order him to stay away because of his ongoing massacre of our children. We do not want or need an apology from the polluted lips of Bergoglio and his church that has blood on its hands. Pope Francis needs to be tried on the charges of crimes against humanity, to which we can personally attest. Now, this order affirms what's already happened, which is several years ago, most of the nations I've mentioned, the Indigenous nations, actually banished the Anglican, Catholic, and United Churches from their territories because of their ongoing crimes against their people and also their history of killing over 60,000 children in the residential schools. And we remember and honor these children now by these actions. Now, in other words, it isn't just Pope Francis who faces prosecution, but these three churches' property and assets can now be lawfully seized by these Indigenous nations. And in fact, what has been going on across Canada. Many local Indigenous nations have been taking over Catholic churches, evicting the priest, and reclaiming them as reparations, as they're entitled to do, as reparations for crimes against humanity and the death of 60,000 children. So the stand that Indigenous elders are now taking with us as allies to our court is going to be a great weapon in not only preventing Bergoglio and his church from operating in this country and anywhere, but actually aiding the arrest and prosecution of this war criminal. Now, there'll be more specifications and charges that will be made public very soon. There'll be statements of the various Indigenous elders who have ordered him off their land, who are seizing the church properties, and who will engage in the arrest Jorge Bergoglio, Pope Francis, if he dares to come to Canada. He has announced he's coming to the Kamloops mass grave site, where his church slaughtered over half the children who went there. There'll be a reception party waiting for him, if he dares to do that, or dares to come anywhere within the borders of these indigenous nations. Now stay tuned for more at murderbydecree.com under ITCCS updates and republicofkanata.ca under breaking news. This is Kevin Annett, Eagle Strong Voice speaking. Not only as the Canadian Field Secretary of the International Common Law Court of Justice, but as an adopted citizen of the Anishinaabeg and the Métis and the West Coast Squamish Nation. And further in that, the Chief Capilano of the Squamish Nation in 2008 appointed me as his legal agent, fiduciary officer, to enforce the eviction order against these genocidal churches. So I'm acting in those capacities in alliance with the Indigenous nations. There'll be more coming out by the middle of this coming week with the charges and specifications and statements of the Indigenous elders who will aid us in the arrest of so-called Pope Francis. Stay strong, stay clear. There'll be more coming soon. This is Kevin Annett, Eagle Strong Voice. I thank you.
So, Kev, the big news, obviously, today is about Jorge Bergoglio, Pope Francis, who's... Well, you told me a couple of days ago on a message he's coming over to North America to visit. But also there's an arrest warrant out for him. Over to you. I feel like you need to take the floor today.
Well, it's so interesting what's happening because, as you may have noticed, Joe Biden flies over to Rome just before this comes out. And Biden's adulation and support is so disgusting. He's praising the guy like he's the second coming. He said, he's my kind of Catholic. God bless him. This is the U.S. president who's sworn under the Constitution not to endorse any religion, strict separation of church and state. And he's a known criminal, Jorge Bergoglio, by his own priest. You know, they've been named by people all over the world. He's just today received a public summons to appear. There's an arrest warrant out for him. There's even a bounty being offered of $10,000 and a... immunity from prosecution to anyone in the Catholic Church who helps arrest this fellow. Because there's new evidence out that Bergoglio personally was involved in approving drug testing on children in Catholic orphanages and schools over the years. One of the things he did in Buenos Aires under the military dictatorship there, as well as trafficking the children of political prisoners. The guy is up to his eyebrows in criminality. And it's proven. The last time he went to America, he publicly beatified, like turned into a saint, this guy called Junipero Serra, who was a Catholic missionary in California, who worked to death over 100,000 Aboriginal people on these Franciscan slave plantations. And he praises the guy and says, we were inspired by his zeal. You know, and he's also absolving over 10,000 priests in America guilty of child rape. All of that in 2017 when he spoke to Congress. So for this to be going on now, right at the very same time he's summoned to appear for these charges, it's like what they do in court. You get a good character reference to show up when you've been accused of something. What better character reference and witness than the president of the United States? But I think it points to something much more heinous, you know, that, you know, this collusion going on. Bergoglio said a few weeks ago that he believes that everybody has a moral obligation to get the shot, the COVID vaccination, and that a single political authority should impose that on everybody, you know, the one world government, the one world religion. So they're walking lockstep in the whole corporatist agenda 2030 thing, right? But I think there's something a lot more evil than that going on in terms of Biden's behavior. It's almost like watching that film, The Manchurian Candidate, the recent version of it, where the U.S. presidential hopeful has been programmed by the Manchurian Global, this corporation, to act as their puppet. I mean, when you look at Biden's behavior, it wasn't just some senile guy trying to get Catholic votes in 2024. I think he was being openly manipulated. And, you know, this is all part of the same crime and evil, you know.
Right. And that corporate, I kind of want to use the phrase mothership, right? The Catholic Church, the Roman Church, is the oldest corporation that there is, right? So this European emperor has subsidiary corporations. That goes towards aristocracy and crown. That goes towards business and finance, banking. And so this overseeing emperor character that we call a pope is now under great pressure. His predecessor is basically under house arrest in the Italian capital, Rome, Vatican. And he's now coming over to North America after the emperor of North America, if you like, the president of the United States, has just been over to his headquarters in Europe. It seems risky to me. It seems like he's taking a gamble because of the exposure and the disclosure and the understanding, the awareness that's out there. The wake up is a phrase you hear a lot. And, you know, what is the response going to be of this villain, you know, felonious criminal coming over to North America, you know, with all this dissent, to say the very least, with regards to authority and governments? Is there a strong possibility that he will be arrested?
Yeah, there is.
Arrest being the French word.
First of all, it's the old tag team operation between church and state. It's been going on since the beginning of the Church of Rome. You know, genocide came out of the Catholic Church, the European genocide tradition, where it said that nobody who isn't a Catholic has the right to live. You can kill anybody if they're not a Catholic. And the church and government set up these residential school death camps. So, yeah, I mean, it's the old scenario playing itself out. But this particular visit Bergoglio is doing is even more insidious because he's going back to Kamloops, which, don't forget, that's the spot where Queen Elizabeth took those 10 children and they vanished. They were never seen again. And William Coombs, who was to give a testimony about that, was killed in the hospital, Catholic hospital in Vancouver, from arsenic poisoning. That's from the nurse who witnessed it. So he's going back for definite cultic purposes. And we know that from some of the native people there who've been hearing scuttlebutt around the band council and that people are actually afraid of him coming because they know what he represents. They know that the Ninth Circle prays, especially in that school. They prayed on a lot of children, but Kamloops was one of these special treatment centers, they call them, where he took a lot of the kids who would run away and were rebellious and put them there. They did a lot of experimentation there, drug testing from Pfizer and the other drug companies that killed a lot of children. And William and others who went to the Kamloops death camp there, the Catholic school, said that they knew of underground chambers where children went down and they never came up. And there's definitely satanic ritual overtones in that place. So it's no accident that he's going there. It's a continuation of the same crime that Elizabeth Windsor is involved in.
But isn't it raising awareness of that crime and you know, those underground labyrinths or bunkers, whatever we're looking at here? This is going to heighten the debate and the conversation about what has happened historically in these locations, right?
Yes, on one level, it helps us tremendously. Just like the COVID police state has really boosted, you know, what we're doing. But it's kind of like there's a ceiling. People get to a certain level of awareness, and then they realize, well, then I'm going up against the whole system. Because look at every level of the media, education, academia, the courts, government, church, everything. It's all controlled by this corporatist authority, right? We see that in, you know, the bias in the news. The posting that I did on YouTube, in one day, it's got 17,000 hits, which is normally it has a couple of thousand. I mean, this is going through the roof, the interest in it, right? Especially over in Europe.
I posted your YouTube video this morning and it's had 3,200 views, you know, on my website alone. It's huge.
Anything having to do with Rome always does that with Vatican corruption and crime. There's a lot of interest because there's a lot of awareness that a lot of the evil started there, goes back to there, right? But what I'm saying is with people, we get to a point like in our campaign when we're confronting the churches, people got to a certain burnout level, I guess you'd call it. And then you realize that how many of us can really change our lives so that we are living in a perpetual state of rebellion against the system. I mean, to some degree, we all accommodate just for rest, just, you know, R&R and to recover and all this. But to switch our thinking to realize that we are in a perpetual war against the status quo at every level, that's a big leap for a lot of people. They want their 3-minute solution. They want him to be brought to justice and then everything is fine, can go back to normal, like the shots will stop and we'll all have our own life back. But what it is, it's ripping away the illusion of what we're part of. It's really making us realize that, you know, there was this, I forget what science fiction, I don't know about you, but I love science fiction. Yeah. But there was this sci-fi movie, and these people were on a planet, and every 7 years it went into total darkness. And all these weird creatures would come out from under the surface. It's kind of a psychological drama too. But all of a sudden, this guy's walking through the planet, and it's pitch black. He lights a torch and he looks around. There's all these creatures all around him right at his feet. And they devour him. But he was walking among them and he didn't realize it. He was just walking in the dark. That's what we are in this culture. We walk through darkness all the time, not really realizing there's corpses and crime and evil happening all right at our elbow. We don't see it. Well, these incidents are like that torch. Suddenly we see it. And a lot of us just want to shut our eyes again and pretend it isn't there. But then you get eaten alive, you know, if you don't see the danger at your elbow.
So they're relying on our dissonance, cognitive dissonance, right? They're counting on the exhaustion and the fatigue, the perception fatigue of the public to turn away, turn their backs on. I've just literally, last couple of days, got this through the post. At the mouth of the cannon. And it really reminded me just then when you were speaking about the Bertrand Russell quote you put at the start of this. As Bertrand Russell observed, the problem with uncovering official secrets is never a lack of proof, but the willingness to disbelieve. We have furnished you with the proof, belief or denial, and what you will do with either is up to you.
Right.
And so there in the nutshell is the issue, right? That the fatigue of the people, you know, going about their regular business, living their lives, you know, on the rat race, on the hamster wheel, pushing the dynamo, has been for decades, centuries, millennia, the normal run of things. But what now we have with this whole COVID facade is a very different normal, in inverted commas. And so that leads people to, you know, the backs to the wall, last chance saloon mentality. And just another one from the same book. I'm noting this profusely, even though I just got it. But this one really kicked into, I think it's basically the first thing you've written in the whole book, which is a quote from the Bible. You know, let's call it the Emperor's Text, as Bergoglio attempts to cover his tracks. When you enter into the land of the people you are to possess, and you have defeated them, you must destroy them totally. Make no treaty with them and show them no mercy. Tear down their altars and destroy their sacred images. Let none of them live. For you are a people chosen by the Lord over all others on the face of the earth. And that's, yeah, that's in Deuteronomy. Deuteronomy chapter 7. And that in lies the essence of the gaslighting aspect that's going on. The black and white checking board, the holy lie of Christianity since...
Well, that's... God, that's a perfect... That quote, we posted that at the start of our documentary film on Repentant, because that's the essential genocidal policy right there in Deuteronomy, that genocide is a Christian... Well, Christian isn't the exact word. It's really a Catholic notion. It came out of the Church of Rome, that belief, because a lot of individual Christians who weren't part of Rome descended from that, right? That whole belief, right? But the Church of Rome had this notion they were the Roman Empire again, and anyone who wasn't didn't have a soul. They still believe that you can, kill anyone who isn't a Catholic and you won't go to hell. You, in fact, you're probably absolved from it by the Pope if you're serving the Church. So that's been an old crusading kind of mentality. But even more basically, besides that, you know, I think when people say, oh, I can't believe the Pope or the President could do a crime like that, what they're really saying is that we've been conditioned from a very early childhood to believe that the rulers, like parents, are virtuous, right? That they can do no wrong. And we don't realize that hegemonic idea is in there because we never have to look at it. But realizing now that the higher you go in society, the more criminal you are. How did you get there in the first place? What do you have to do to maintain that power? The shit always rises to the top, but we always think of it goes to the bottom. It's a way of a self-defeating, self-hating. You know, we hate everyone around us and we're fighting everyone around us instead of looking at the real source of the crime in the heads of state and churches and the corporatocracy. So this is a way for people to mentally break free of that. And I think, I don't mean to deprecate this process. I think as hard it is for people, I think there is a great awakening happening because of the very actions of these criminals.
100%, I agreed. And that Roman Catholic hub of spirituality, as I mentioned a little earlier on, morphs into banking and business and other areas of life. And so, you know, reading the first 30, 40 pages or so of this book really gives you an insight into how the area that Bergoglio, Pope Francis, is arriving at was exterminated. The native people were systematically and covertly murdered by germ warfare. And it's so relevant. You know, again, it feels very almost prophetic in its relevance to this whole situation, that this germ warfare, whether that was smallpox or tuberculosis or whatever it was instigated, injected into the population specifically in order to eradicate them and then steal and exploit their lands, right, for business.
You know, when I used to get invited to campuses to speak, and I don't anymore, I just totally blacklisted out, but I used to ask scholars and the students, why is it that the Indian Act of Canada has never taken off the books the fact that if you're an Indian living on a reservation, you have to agree to medical treatment and inoculations or you go to jail? Why? And none of them could ever answer that. Well, the point is, they need to do that to continue the genocide. They have to have the ability to wipe them out at any point. And that's proof of genocide right there, just like the huge death rates for nearly a century in these so-called schools, residential schools. But nobody can look at the elephant in the room because it shows, it's like a big mirror. It shows us who we are. It shows them the nature of this culture we came out of, that we fought against a lot, and yet we're fighting against ourselves. So there's part of us that identifies with that evil because we were raised in it, right? So it's psychologically a hard one for people. It's easier to fight on a campaign about some enemy thousands of miles away, some injustice far away, than when it's happening right in your own culture, in your own mind, right?
There seems to be these days a much more empathetic public perception of native people. Something seems to have changed since the Darwinian, master of the species philosophy, to a much more holistic view of humanity. And so another quote from At the Mouth of the Cannon, this is specifically about the Roman Catholic missionary, Catholic priest named Auguste Joseph Brabant. 20 years earlier, this is the 1800s, end of the 1800s, 70s, 1870s, had laid claim to all of the Ahusats. Am I pronouncing that right?
Ahusat, yeah.
Ahusat, and the neighboring tribes as part of his flock. Okay, so there was this sort of farming grab of native peoples at this time, and you make the quote in a minute about poaching between the subsidiary churches, which all come from that hub of Roman Catholicism, right? The neighboring tribes as part of his flock. In a letter to the government demanding that the Protestant intruder be barred from that Ahusat territory, so already we've got the division between Protestant and Catholic, Brabant accuses Swartout, or I guess is the Protestant, and his church of poaching. Hey, get off these natives. We saw them first, right?
Right.
The animal reference is fitting, for by then the Ahusats, like the sea otters, were close to extinction. Even the most obtuse government-sponsored account of the West Coast genocide acknowledges the extremely rapid pace by which smallpox wiped out entire West Coast Indian cultures. According to the collaborationist state-allied Indigenous Corporate Training Incorporated, half the coastal native population was wiped out in 1 year. It is estimated that prior to the 1862 smallpox epidemic, there were about 30,000 First Nations living on the coastline of BC. Post-epidemic, that number drops to 1,500. This typically low Euro-Canadian estimate of Aboriginal numbers obscures the fact that the seeds of the depopulation of many hundreds of thousands of Indians had been planted on the West Coast soon after first contact in 1778. Many of the coastal Indians had already died by mid-19th century. Even the state-managed and censored Wikipedia admits that from earliest contact with European explorers up until 1830, more than 90% of the West Coast Nootka Sound Confederacy died as a result of infectious disease epidemics. Like many other tribes, the Ahusats began to fight back after most of their people had been killed off by this, right, by the plague. And well, how relevant to now?
By comparison, the death rate in Auschwitz was about 1/3, you know, because it was a work camp too. They needed able-bodied people to do industrial labor in that. These were just death camps. So 50 to 60, up to 90%. When it's on that level, people look at it and say, oh, that wasn't genocide. Well, hello, you know.
One of the points that you made in our chat a couple of years ago about that death rate in the death camps for children being higher than those in Central Europe during the Nazis 20th century, it's a real cold shower, that one. That children were being stockpiled in these schools, and if they weren't exterminated and executed there in these mush holes and these awful scenarios and situations, then perhaps they were then sold and exported as farm stock to perhaps places even around the world where cult ceremonies would use these kids for sacrifices. I was listening to a woman over here who's a survivor, Jeanette Archer, of these horrific aristocratic VIP royal hunting parties. And she speaks specifically about bands on the wrists that these children are given just before they're set loose as game sport for the horse-backed murderers to kill them, that she was part of a satanic family and therefore she would always survive. Her wristband color would guarantee her survival after these awful events. But so many of these kids were also murdered and killed sacrificially or for sport. And I wonder, you know, is there an export business going on with regards to this exploitation of native children from, you know, your part of the world,
right,
to this part of the world?
Well, don't forget, everything is always going to turn a profit. So it's not like they were just randomly wiping out. In the phases of genocide, the first phase, you've got to exterminate most of the population, about 90%, bring it down to a manageable level, get the land that way, start creating the brainwashed chiefs to manage the genocide. You know, the whole British colonial system operated that way all over the world. But the kids were exported for purposes like you're talking about, but also as cheap labor. They were deliberately given no education, so they were trained as the girls as domestic servants, the boys as farmhand labor. And a lot of the residential school principals made a lot of money by farming out slave labor. Kids wouldn't get anything. They would work to death, which solved the problem as well, and profited the local farmers and businesses and that. So, you know, it was a slave economy, and just like what people are being turned into now, with the same methods. Applying the same Indian Act laws now to everybody to enforce mandatory vaccinations.
And what we're seeing with these North American natives, we have these charlatan chameleons who are turncoats, treacherous traitors of their people and their tribes, who are being paid mercenaries almost to assist with the exploitation and extermination of their own people. And you can look at that from a historical perspective as well. And this seems like this wave of empirical conquests, you know, whether it's here in Wales 1,000 years ago, that there is a morphing and a corruption of the native people to do it, in inverted commas, to their own people, so that perpetual conquest of humanity continues, right?
Right. Just like, you know, the Scottish Highland chiefs did the same thing during the clearances. That's how my family, my mom's family, got over to Canada. They were cleared out of the Highlands and had to come over to you know, Hudson's Bay Territory in Canada, because the chiefs all had land. They were working with the English. The same thing the native chiefs did. But don't forget, I mean, the word aboriginal, ab-original, means not of the original group, like abnormal, right? Aboriginal means you're not indigenous. You're something new that the colonial system creates. And that was one of the purposes of these residential schools, to find the kids who could be brainwashed. They were in a protected group. If, you know, the kids that would rat out the other children if they spoke their language, they were in a protected group, and they would then went on to become the chief, the local chief, and sell off the land and everything. You see that as a pattern all over Canada. So it's a very controlled system, and and very efficient. When you talk to these chiefs, they don't see anything wrong in it. They said, well, it was either die or conform. And, you know, you have native lawyers, teachers, politicians now, but they're all, they're whiter than the white people in terms of how they view their own people and culture. They do the traditional kind of, you know, regalia and cultural events to make them seem like they're native. But I mean, in their heart and soul, no, they're, that's why they're called apples. I mean, red on the outside, white on the inside. It's the native chiefs that are conducting a lot of the genocide today, forcing their own people off the land, selling off the land to China. You know, I mean, they're the main problem now. So, you know, it's the same thing playing itself out over and over, right?
And it's the perfect foil almost for the corporate mothership, you know, the Vatican or whatever, to have these this division of, you know, the local communities by the the betrayal of the westernized chiefs. There was a guy you mentioned in perhaps this book, Chief Earl?
Earl McQuinnah George.
Right. And he's remained loyal and faithful to the native.
Well, that's why he died. I got fired from the United Church when I found out about these land deals where the Ahouset land was being sold off by the United Church, who had grabbed it originally by their missionaries, including that Melvin Swartout guy you mentioned. They grabbed the land, sold it off to big logging companies, and Earl George and I both found out about it. He was the traditional, it was called Keeper of the Land. His traditional role was to guard the land. And the Band Council chiefs in the house had recruiting a company to log in conjunction with Weyerhaeuser. And they were against him protecting the land because they wanted to profit by it, the chiefs. So Earl George was training for the United Church ministry. He and I got thrown out of the church in the same 3-month period by the same men because we were highlighting this, you know, this deal, a house of land grab that went against church policy and everything, but it was big money coming in to do it. And Earl subsequently died the next year under extremely suspect circumstances. So, I mean, like, it's like I'd be dead too if I was native by now, right? It's what happens in that world. That's how you deal with the slave population. You can get rid of them and nobody cares or knows, right?
Like many other tribes, the Ahusats began to fight back after most of their people had been killed off by the plague. In the same year of 1864, when the smallpox deaths had peaked across the province, both the Ahusats and the Chilcotin people of central BC did battle with white settlers and traveling agents of death like John Sheepshanks. In response, 9 coastal Ahusat villages were bombarded and partly destroyed by Royal Navy gunships. And hot on the heels of this grim and cannoneering warfare came the missionary invasion. So after they've been massacred physically in terms of, you know, highly sophisticated and technologically advanced weaponry, the Catholics had arrived first, naturally. One of them, a Jesuit missionary named Paul Durieu, cooked up the original blueprint for corralling and eliminating all the independent Aboriginals on the West Coast. The Durieu plan was a rehashing of a very old Roman strategy, which was to wipe out the traditional leaders of any targeted group and elevate the new converts among the conquered to a false authority in the indigenous villages, a watchman system of spying on and eliminating any lingering traditionalists was then established. Its main purpose was to complete the eradication of the conquered by imprisoning and brainwashing the next generation of their own people to be servants of the conquerors in special internment camps, deceptively named Indian schools.
So that, right. Well, I mean, it's the same process that happened in Europe. That's why my family had to flee from France as Huguenots, because, you know, you get the king to collude. You set up these Jesuit-run schools like Georgetown University in Washington, D.C., right? Trains all the politicians. It's just the old system at work. But I'm glad you mentioned John Sheepshanks. He was an Anglican missionary. He was on a board of directors of something called the Puget Sound Land Company, which was buying up all the land, even though there's still natives living on it. They preempted the land while they were still alive because they knew they were about to be wiped out. And in 1864, in the summer, this missionary goes up and inoculates 2/3 of the people the interior Chilcotin people. They all die from smallpox. He's created all this profit for his fellow shareholders, which was affiliated with the Hudson's Bay Company. These shareholders are all the members of the colonial government, the attorney general, the premier, everybody. They're all in on the land deal. They preempt all this land. He's rewarded with a seat in the House of Lords. And he dies in 1909, an honored man, right? An Anglican bishop for having wiped out all these Chilcotins. You don't see his name in the history books, but this is from a local librarian in Cornell, which is center of BC, where this land is, you know, where the Chilcotin land was. And there's hardly any Chilcotins left. He found all these records in the library and he published it. No publisher would touch it. So he had to do what I did with Murder by Decree and just get it out there. But, you know, and it's just astounding the evidence you come across, right?
And you talk about, you know, this elevation, this promotion, you know, the profiling of psychopathy is perhaps an interesting way to look at it. So that this template and this blueprint that, you know, was there in the 1800s was here now with this injection extermination program that's going on at the moment in conjunction with the corporate profiteering, et cetera, et cetera, et cetera. You know, this template and this blueprint rolls out through history. And it seems to me, you know, characters like Boris Johnson, we have over here as the Prime Minister, you know, there's a factor that the psychopathic characteristic finds it funny, and there's an entertainment aspect of the hypocrisy and the treachery of those tribal native people, and that sort of is titillating and amusing for these lofty, aloof aristocrats and governmental authority characters. Would you agree with that? That when you get into these cults, you know, you're talking about Georgetown. You know, here we have the channel that goes Eton College, black and white, you know, very Venetian black nobility, through to Oxford University. Then you get these kind of little cults like the Bullingdon Club, very well shown in the movie The Riot Club. And these little sects that contribute so intricately to the bigger overarching programs of murder and exploitation, it's they sit in their drawing rooms with their brandies and their cigars, chuckling to themselves, right?
Well, there is a whole entertainment value here for the rich, super rich, and the people who run these things. I know that one of the first stories we got into the media in October 1996 that appeared in the Globe and Mail, which is Canada's largest newspaper at the time. And the headline was "Electric Chair Set Up to Amuse Dignitaries." And it was about a school, the St. Mary's Catholic School in Albany, Ontario. And they had an electric chair in the basement, not just to punish the kids, but they had groups of politicians, church leaders, Mounties, you know, people, wealthy people who would come in and sit there in an auditorium, and a kid would be put in the electric chair and it would be shocked. And people got to shock him over and over. You know, the thrill, they charge money. The thrill of, I get to shock an 8-year-old kid and watch him scream and cry and die in front of me. And that was admitted on the front page of the Globe and Mail newspaper, and yawn. No response, no editorial, no documentary, nothing. Buried. Like one mention, and then you don't hear about it again for another 15 years. They you know, resurrected that story 15 years later and put their own spin on it. I mean, this shows you it's a fundamental question of how can we do that and live alongside that unless we're part of that evil. We don't see anything wrong with it. I didn't, you know, I mean, I doubt if before I went through this hell myself, I might have had that same reaction of, oh, well, you know, it's in the past. Like, we're all part of that psyche. That's the point. And that's why it's so hard to confront it. People are still attached to that way of thinking, right?
Yeah, the leap between, you know, what is actually going on with these brutalizing and terrorizing and murdering and sexual exploitation of children by these. The other book I got in the post with yours, so I don't know if you know this one, is Transformation of America by...
I've got an autographed copy from her.
Wow, okay. Yeah. So Kathy O'Brien in that, she's talking about Gerald Ford, the American president, and this translates to pretty much, I think it's safe to say, all the presidents so far. And how amusing, you know, perhaps they see it on the dark web. Often you hear the survivors talking about CCTV cameras being there when they're having their mind control torture and this kind of stuff. So, you know, who's watching that? Do people pay to view this snuff movie stuff, right? Yeah. And so how hilarious that this guy who's standing up at a lectern, you know, lecturing the people about morals and ethics from his presidential position is, you know, forcing infant girls like Kathy O'Brien into, you know, horrific sexual, brutalizing experiences. And that sort of polar extreme from one to the other is what they enjoy.
Yeah, and it makes me wonder other reasons why Joe Biden is in Rome right now.
Well, then his son with a laptop, right?
Well, he like all American presidents, and I include both parties, there's no exception, you know. They're all like all the popes and all the cardinals. You don't get into those positions unless, A, you know about this stuff, and B, you're a willing participant. So Biden and Bergoglio could very well be involved in a Ninth Circle cult ritual. Last night was Halloween, don't forget. Right. He's there over Samhain or Halloween, which is a high point in the satanic calendar. I'm sure they were involved in a Ninth Circle ritual in the Vatican basements or the San Lorenzo Jesuit Church, which is about a mile down the road, and I've been there. It's the oldest Jesuit church in the world, and that's where some of the Ninth Circle ceremonies happen in their sub-basement area there. From eyewitnesses, like Toast Nienhaus, who was taken there. So I think that's... And I'm going to mention this in my column coming out on Wednesday. I think that Biden was there for a Ninth Circle event. It, maybe his zombie-like behavior explained that, you know.
Right. It would be surprising to people like you who've researched this kind of thing that if it wasn't an occult sacrificial event, right?
Yeah, no, I think it's no way a coincidence. But because it's, you know, it's like, these satanic systems rely on people's unbelief, inability to comprehend it as their main protection, because it makes perfect sense when you look at the history of these institutions that this stuff would be going on.
And similarly, there's a strong possibility that as the Pope comes over now to Kamloops, he will be attempting to revitalize, perhaps ironic word to use, but that death energy of Kamloops that was left from October 1964. It's energizing that dense energy, right?
Yeah. He's a chief spokesman for the one world government, one world religion. He wants everybody to get the shot, like I mentioned. Activating that demonic energy on behalf of that project is part of what his job is, you know.
The three waves of smallpox that wiped out most of the remaining Ahusants between 1862 and 1895 were neither accidental nor acts of God. On the contrary, they were actions of the Hudson's Bay Company, its subsidiary, the Puget Sound Agricultural Company, PSAC, and their political backers and fellow PSAC shareholders in the colonial government. Like elsewhere in what became British Columbia, germ warfare was deliberately introduced among local Indian tribes by vaccine-bearing missionaries, men like Reverend, in inverted commas, John Sheepshanks, as we mentioned, of the Anglican Church of Canada. So another aspect you hear from the Christian fraternity is that, oh, those Catholics, they're awful, but, you know, our denomination and our subsidiary of Christianity is improved and much more cleansed of the awful historic stuff from the Romans and the Catholic. But what your testimonies and experiences and research shows in a big way is that you have the Presbyterians, you have the Canadian United Church, you have the Anglicans, and you have the Catholics, all completely in bed with each other. So for these you know, Christians to try and to disassociate themselves from this infrastructure of murder is futile, right?
Well, they're all part of it. Now, don't forget, of course, they copied an original Vatican model. You mentioned Paul Duryea, who came up with the blueprint. based on the whole Vatican. I mean, the Catholics have been at it the longest, so they're the most sophisticated, and everyone copied them, but they're all involved. That's why I got thrown out and delisted and blacklisted, right? But don't forget that even the churches who didn't do it, they all backed these churches. When I started my whole campaign back in the 90s, I went to groups like the Mennonites, the Quakers, people who had no connection with that whole state genocidal tradition, right? Who were even dissident Christians, and none of them would dare criticize the other churches, right? They said, well, we're friends with them. We go, you know, we run a food bank with them. We go to ecumenical gatherings with them. We don't want to upset them, right? So, I mean, it was that same collusion going on. I've never met one group of Christians who actively supported the campaign, right? You know, as a group, a church group. No, they had a policy of not only getting together on the legal actions and in to respond to the lawsuits brought by natives, but on every front, on the blacklisting, they work together as one. So there isn't, it's like there's no separation of church and state in practice, as Biden is demonstrating, right?
And that leads on to areas like education, right? The education system, although officially, you know, in the US Constitution is decoupled from the church, it stems from originally from the church, right? And, you know, of the residential schools of death, the death camp residential schools is a clear example of, you know, the connection there. But when you get to comprehensive education, for example, over here in the UK, there appears to be on the surface of it a clear separation between education and church. But very much that we're talking about templates and blueprints of how it's rolled out through history, and it just changes the personnel on the carousel. You know, new face, same system, and that perpetual rollout of the same. It's mind control, right? It's macro, yeah. Mind control.
And the thing to realize about religion is that it's not about God. It's not about spirituality at all. Religio is a Latin word meaning to rebind, to tie together, like as in one kind of corporation, right? And the spiritual impulse we're born in, it's like our inherent liberties. You can't define faith for another person. It's all, that's why indigenous people couldn't understand the missionaries. You know, they would say, well, everyone has their own experience of the Creator. What do you mean you're teaching us about it, right? We can't all believe one thing. That's crazy. Right. We all have our own experience of it. So, you know, religion is really a state power. It has nothing to do with all of this stuff. Like, you know, Biden made this disgusting comment about how wonderful Bergoglio was because he believes in, you know, helping the world's poor. Well, I mean, it's a sentimentalizing of these murderers. That's religion. You know, it's interesting when you look in history, because I did a lot of anthropology. I was going to actually train for be an archaeologist before this. But if you look at the rise of state societies, it was always preceded by the rise of what's called the temple state. So that you couldn't have pharaohs or kings without priests first, because the priest would say, you got to go work and die for this one guy because the gods favor him, right? And you had to have the brainwashing of religion to lead to the state. It preceded it. So they've always been tag team. And just a different manifestation of the same beast, really. Just how a few rule the many. The mind control of religion, right?
I've been thinking a lot recently about the chessboard, and you have the bishops tucked in with the royals, right? On either side, the blacks, yeah. And the whites, you know, checkerboard again. That Venetian black nobility situation, where you have the overt white front, yeah. and the dark undercurrent of the black. But those bishops are opposing each other, you know, on the chessboard. But that overarching empirical, the hub of the empire from the Vatican, the papal authority, controls both sides of the chessboard, right? And so that divide and rule happens with the two sets of bishops opposing each other. You know, you could look at communism and fascism in the 20th century and say those are the bishops, right? Those are the two warring states of cognitive consciousness. And that division of humanity is, you know, again, we're talking about templates and blueprints, and this is what you can go back further. You know, the Vatican and the papal situation, you can trace back for the last 2,000 years, but then you can go further east and perhaps go to Byzantium and Constantinople and the Mesopotamia cradle of life, you know, get back to the Sumerians or whatever.
Well, you notice in chess, in chess, the king never dies. You can't actually kill the king. It can kill everybody else, but the king, you can't.
You can only catch him.
And there's all us pawns out in front. But it's interesting about chess because the pawns are actually the most powerful piece when they work together. The pawns can immobilize the entire game by their configuration, right? You've got all these powerful pieces, but they can't move without the pawns. So I had a game the other day with a friend, and we had our pawn configuration so that we had to create a solid wall, like a World War I trench warfare situation, and nobody could move. The game was a stalemate because the pawns had shut down the whole game.
Okay.
If they work together, right, all the pawns, if we all got together, we could shut down their power tomorrow. And that's chess proves that, right?
Yeah, yeah.
And life proves that.
There's a great historian I was listening to a lot over the last couple of years, Webster Tarplay, and he's big into looking at the cancer of empirical exploitation, murder, conquest throughout history, and he's very interesting to listen to about that Reformation of the early 1500s, and he makes a claim with evidence to back it up that the Reformation was a contrived divide and rule strategy to deflect away from the League of Cambrai War, which was a few years earlier. And that war, again, you know, I've officially studied history, you know, down the channels for a lot of my life and never came across this until a couple of years ago. But Webster Tarplay talks about how the League of Cambrai War was basically Europe busting Venice in its covert, agent-driven control of all the kings and queens, you know, the chessboard, all over Europe. And, you know, the game was up and the Venetian city was busted for its financial cajoling and corrupting. And everybody was basically heading to smash Venice. So they called upon one of their agents in the Central European heartlands, Luther, and started off Protestantism to divide Christianity, mess with everybody's heads in terms of, you know, religion and connecting with God. And sure enough, you know, the Venetian problem was set aside because the deeper, essential spiritual conflict was much more.
Well, it's interesting because Luther actually didn't represent a big change. It was the Swiss Reformation with Calvin who really broke from Rome, you know, what they call the Radical Reformation, because Luther's theology was very Romanist, right? But, you know, it was kind of a variation on the whole theme, just like Anglicanism, you know, you got the king, the head of the church instead of the pope, but it's still worldly power at work, right? So all of that. And again, if you step back from it all, what you're saying is really interesting because it shows you that we really need to step back and just look at the whole ball of wax and what the agenda is. And it's always been the same simple agenda going back 6,000 years, right? Pharaoh's rule of slaves. And sometimes you give the slaves a sense of a bit of freedom, right? But where does the essential power lie and who's calling the shots? Well, the pawns can call the shots. They just haven't woken up to their power, you know?
Absolutely, yeah. And this is very much Webster Tarplay's point, is that there's a template and a blueprint that, you know, is just perpetual in its rollout, different technology, different personnel. Another quote from your book here, back to the start of it. This is Provincial Land Commissioner Gilbert Sproat commenting on the Ausant Indian tribe, Port Alberni, 1868. And this is, you know, your stomping ground, Port Alberni. It is obvious that the local savages surrendered their lands only at the mouth of a cannon. And I suppose this will account for their eventual disappearance. The consequence upon any people when confronted by a superior nation is always the same everywhere. And British Columbia is no exception. And then,
right. Well, you have it in a nutshell.
Yeah. And following that one, Daniel Defoe in 1706, our ancestors obtained the kingdom thus. The very lands we all along enjoyed, they ravished from the people they destroyed. From them, our large possessions we enjoy, and time makes the wrong no less. Thus all our fathers' villainies we crown, approve their crimes, and make them all our own. And these must help us claim a right divine by blood, by rapes, by robberies proclaimed. Religion's always on the strongest side. And, you know, that really
makes, that passage
makes me think of the Second World War, where, you know, the Roman Catholic Church was so heavily involved sponsoring and educating the top Nazi sect cult who were pulling the strings of you know, the bloodshed.
Well, it takes us back.
And also the escape.
It takes us back, too, to the whole thing going on that we started the show with, which is about Bergoglio and the summons and the court order to arrest him. It's striking at the heart of the problem. And that's why there's so much reading the comments of people. They keep saying, who's going to do it? Who's going to do it? Like, who's going to arrest him? And I try to show them that we deputize the police. We can arrest him. We can stop the system at any point we like to. But people are always kind of being so conditioned into looking into the father figure to do everything for them. And, you know, I mean, that's, again, part of the problem. And yet this is, like you said earlier, this is on a higher level now. People have achieved enough of awareness to say, okay, we've got to start dethroning. And I should mention that book of mine too, Dethroning a Rogue Power. This is something I wrote that's gotten circulated at the UN, actually. It's the argument why the Vatican needs to be expelled from the United Nations. You know, systematically proving how they're a criminal organization.
Explain to us the Roman See, or the Catholic See, SWE, right?
Yeah, it's their diplomatic arm. It's the thing that the Vatican works through when they send their, quote, ambassadors to other countries or to the UN. Now, they're not a government. They're not a nation under international law, but they call themselves that. There was an English scholar, Jeffrey Robertson, and he calls the Vatican a Santa Claus state because it's imagined, you know, you pretend this guy called Santa Claus to keep the kids happy at Christmas, right? But everybody knows it's not true, but they all play along. So the governments of the world play along with this fiction that the Vatican is a state when everyone knows they aren't. But they treat them like that because of their money, their political influence from Catholic voters. I mean, they're all playing this fiction, right?
And back to, as we come to the close here, back to Bergoglio himself. So as he plans to arrive in North America, he's facing an arrest warrant that specifically involves him individually with child trafficking, right? Can this is back to his Argentina days?
Well, it's a pretty, it's a very wide indictment. Going back to Argentina, talking about now, and I'm going to look at the full docket of evidence from the prosecutor this week. So, you know, obviously they can't reveal a lot of it until the actual trial or the trial in absentia if they're not able to get them. But the point is that it runs the gamut of child trafficking, criminal conspiracy, agreeing to have children used in drug testing protocols under his own signature as an archbishop and then as the pope. So-called, as a cardinal as well, active membership in the Ninth Circle, attending those ritual, those coven, you know, ceremonies, involving in the cover-up of evidence, the destruction of evidence in Kamloops that he ordered because it was a Catholic school. I mean, it's a very big indictment. And it won't be just common law sheriffs and others, hopefully deputized police in Canada, who will be attempting the arrest. It will be Native people themselves, because we have people, indigenous elders, who have already ordered the Catholic Church off their land. There was a statement made on July 1st. Elders from nine indigenous nations published the statement saying the Catholic, Anglican, and United Churches are permanently banned and expelled from their territories, taken in most of Canada. And that includes Kamloops. The Interior Salish, you know, adopted that statement too. So he'll be trespassing illegally if it comes to Kamloops and anywhere in Canada, and the Native people can rightly arrest him and do whatever they want to him under their law, right?
To clarify with that one, so Kamloops, death camp for children, residential school, has Elizabeth Windsor's murder of 10 children there, 10th of October, 1964. And you're saying that Bergoglio individually, personally, assisted with the cover-up of that crime?
Oh, yes, because it was a Ninth Circle cult, just like subsequent, you know, ceremonies were. The incident in 1964 has got a lot of play because of the murder of the witness, William Coombs, and because it involved Elizabeth Windsor. But a lot of activities like that went on routinely. The papal nuncio in Canada was ordered generation after generation to conceal this stuff on direct orders of the Pope. Every Pope did it, including Bergoglio. It's just their standard policy to do that.
And how do you see this? Let's run with a hypothesis or a hypothetical future rollout of what might happen here. Let's imagine that in the not too distant future, the head of the Roman Catholic Church is cited and arrested and incarcerated as the criminal that he and his predecessors clearly are. Those systemic channels, I'm thinking personally from my individual perspective with my little boys at a Roman Catholic church in Somerset, interesting, you know, connections with ancient Babylon there with the name Somerset here in England. And that school is a private boarding school where a lot of overseas children come, and it's, you know, it's self perpetuating in terms of finances. But with that head of the snake decapitated, shall we say, does it all crumble away quite quickly, or are these systems able to morph and maintain and sustain themselves?
The head grows up again because we haven't attacked the source, and you can't do that without spiritual warfare and spiritual armor. You know, so for example, the you know, in the book of Revelation, they talk about the harlot, the great harlot, the Antichrist, who all the powers of the world worship. And what do you think Biden is doing by going to Rome, right? When they talk in the Bible about Antichrist, they don't talk about an individual. They talk about a place. The seven hells of Rome, you know, and the, you know, John's vision he has in the book of Revelation is that there's seven hills on which the Antichrist sits. So whoever sits in the chair of Peter, you know, the church, the Bishop of Rome, so-called Pope, he takes on that energy of Antichrist. He is the opponent of God in the world, beguiling and fooling people to worship a man rather than creation, the creator, Christ, however you see it, right? And so I think we're seeing it played out. I think we are seeing that prophecy playing out. I don't think it's going to happen along the lines that churches talk about because they're controlled by it. So you can't believe them. But I do think that there is this spiritual separation going on. People are deciding who they're going to serve, truth and life and everything that's good, or this sickness that's embodying itself in the corporatocracy, the COVID police state, Biden and Bergoglio, all of this sickness. People are seeing there's a fork in the road we have to choose.
Right.
You know, it starts within, right?